joint work with Sipio Kukani and Dmitry Pelinovsky. We study linearized operator L equal to product of JH, where J is a third Pauli matrix, 1, 0, 0, minus 1, and H is a Schrödinger type operator, minus Laplacian plus omega plus f, g of x, minus Laplacian plus omega plus f of x, in the space of n dimensions, n is greater or equal than 3. This problem arises when studying states close to a soliton of the nonlinear Schrödinger equation. Nonlinear Schrödinger equation is I psi with respect to t minus Laplacian psi u of x psi plus f psi squared psi. The problem has a solitonic solution psi of x t equal to phi of x e to the power I omega t. Omega is the frequency of the acceleration of the soliton, and phi of x is a real valued function c infinity. By plugging psi of x t into the nonlinear Schrödinger equation, we obtain that phi of x satisfies the equation minus Laplacian phi plus omega phi plus u of x phi plus f of phi squared phi equal to 0. We are looking for the exponentially decreasing solution of such a nonlinear equation. If phi of x is positive on the whole space, then this soliton we call a ground state. And if phi of x is sign indefinite, we call it excited state or nodal soliton. We linearize NLS around this soliton. So we look for the solution psi equal to phi of x plus perturbation. Phi small of x e to the power lambda t plus theta adjoint of x e to the power lambda adjoint t times e to the power I omega t. So these are the perturbations, and they change in time as exponent lambda t, exponent lambda adjoint complex conjugate t. So when we linearize equation around nonlinear Schrödinger equation around the soliton, we obtain precisely spectral problem L psi vector equals to lambda psi on L2 Rn, where psi vector is a vector function out of two components. I lambda is the eigenvalue, and L is precisely this operator JH. This operator L is obviously not self-adjoint. Potential u of x in the NLS, we choose to be c infinity and exponentially decreasing, so that linearized operator satisfies the needed properties, like f and g functions are smooth and exponentially decreasing. And nonlinearity f is c infinity and equal to 0 at 0. The energy functional for the problem is just a quadratic form of the operator h itself on the Sobolev space H1. So since perturbation behaves like e to the power lambda t, e to the power lambda conjugate t, we have instabilities when real part of lambda is positive. In the equivalent form, we can rewrite our spectral problem using the pair of Schrödinger operators, L plus minus equal to minus Laplacian plus omega plus f plus minus g of x, where f and g are smooth exponentially decreasing functions. So in fact, f of x equal to u plus f of phi squared plus f prime phi squared phi squared, and g is f prime of phi squared phi squared. So we have a precise form for the functions f and g involved in the pair of Schrödinger operators L plus minus. And then we obtain the equivalent formulation of our spectral problem as L plus U equals to minus lambda W and L minus W equal to lambda. So which, U and W introduced as we had a vector function psi vector. First component we just write as U plus IW and second is U minus IW. And then we obtain the equivalent form for our spectral problem. The energy functional rewrites as H, sum of quadratic forms, L plus computed on U and L minus calculated on W. So for the negative index of our energy functional, we need to add together negative index of the operator L plus and negative index of the Schrödinger operator L minus. The spectrum of the problem for the operator L looks as follows. There is a branch of continuous spectrum from omega to plus infinity and from minus omega to minus infinity. If we have a real eigenvalue lambda, then we have minus lambda, another real eigenvalue. And if we have purely imaginary eigenvalue lambda, then we have minus lambda purely imaginary. This is very easy to obtain by computation. And if we have a complex eigenvalue lambda for the operator L, then we have complex conjugate lambda, minus lambda, and minus lambda complex conjugate. So if we have an eigenvalue line in the complex plane, then we have four eigenvalues. The operator L has a kernel, has zero modes. It's easy to show that L computed on the vector function phi minus phi gives zero. So phi minus phi is a zero mode for the operator L. And there is a generalized eigenvector, minus d phi d omega minus d phi d omega. So L acts on the generalized eigenvector, we obtain a zero mode phi minus phi. So we have so dimension of the generalized kernel is equal to 2. We assume that there is no, in the work, we assume that there is no other zero modes in the problem. The adjoint operator, L adjoint, has the same eigenvalues as L, which is easy to obtain. And eigenvectors will be just flipped. Second component will become first, and first become second, actually, for this problem. So for the operator L star, there is a zero mode phi zero star, which equals to phi and phi. And L star acting on the generalized eigenvector minus d phi d omega gives us zero mode phi zero star. So in the work, we used the assumption that kernel of the operator L is equal to phi minus phi, and there is only one generalized, there is a generalized eigenvector, and total dimension of the generalized kernel is equal to 2. There is no other elements in the kernel. There was a theorem proved by Gerlache, Shatta, and Strauss about the reduction of negative index of the operator H. So if we go to a constrained subspace of L2, of such vector functions in L2, which are orthogonal to the kernel of the adjoint operator, then we have a quantity QS equal to square of L2 norm of the solid on phi. And if its derivative is non-negative, then by going to such a constrained subspace, negative index of the operator H gets reduced by 1. And if derivative is negative, then negative index of the operator doesn't change if you go to such a constrained subspace. We can, in the work, we generalize this theorem to the case of other eigenvalues, which can, in general, be real, imaginary, and complex. For practical purposes, it's useful to rewrite the problem, as I said, in the form L plus U equals to minus lambda W and L minus W equals to lambda. So, and we treat three cases when, as I said, the eigenvalues are imaginary, real, and complex. So, first case, the eigenvalues are purely imaginary for the operator L. And lambdas in this case are real because the whole eigenvalue is I lambda. So, in this problem, the eigenvalue lambda is real. So we consider the case when lambda is a non-zero simple real eigenvalue and correspondent eigenvector is u0 w0. We make a sequence of constraint subspace, so we are in the subspace xk minus 1 of all 2, and we are about to go to the next constraint subspace. So then it's elementary to show that minus lambda 0 is another eigenvalue with the eigenvector u0 minus w0. The problem adjoint to this has the same eigenvalues lambda 0 minus lambda 0, and eigenvectors, as I said, are getting flipped. U1 adjoint is W0, U0, and U2 adjoint is minus W0, U0, which is elementary to show. Since we got orthogonalized to the kernel of the adjoint operator, L minus has no kernel and gets invertible, and from the system, it's easy to conclude that L plus U0 equals to minus lambda 0 squared, L minus the power negative 1, U0. And multiplying by U0, making a scalar product, we obtain the relation for the quadratic forms. L plus U0, U0 quadratic form equals to minus lambda 0 squared. L minus the power minus 1, U0, U0 quadratic form. So it turns out if lambda 0 is a simple eigenvalue of the spectral problem, then these quadratic forms are non-zero and have opposite signs. So we prove it by contrapositive. Suppose these quadratic forms are zero. Then we show that there is a generalized eigenvector. Generalized eigenvector has components u0, 1, w0, 1. It's easy to obtain that first component U0, 1 satisfies the equation. L plus U0, 1 equals to minus lambda 0 squared. L minus inverse U0, 1 minus 2 lambda 0. L minus inverse U0. So we had a homogeneous equation for U0. And for the first component of the generalized eigenvector, we obtain such an equation. And second component, W0, can be expressed through the first one. So this equation is non-homogeneous, and if we assume that L minus the power minus 1 U0 U0 quadratic form is equal to 0, then the right-hand side of this equation is orthogonal to the solution of the homogeneous equation U0. So then by Fredholm alternative theorem, the solution U0, 1 in L2RN exists. So, and second component of the generalized eigenvector can be obtained from the first one. So in this case, we have a generalized eigenvector, which contradicts to the assumption that lambda 0 is a simple eigenvalue. So when lambda 0 is a simple eigenvalue of the problem, then these quadratic forms do not vanish. Since lambda 0 is real, and we have a minus sign, these quadratic forms will have opposite signs. We can consider, for example, the case when L plus U0, U0 is negative, and L minus the power minus 1, U0, U0 is positive. They have the opposite signs. And the case when this is positive and this is negative is treated exactly the same way. So, since U0 is a function in the Hilbert space for which the quadratic form of the operator L plus is negative, this means that by min-max principle that L plus has at least one negative eigenvalue. in the original subspace x k minus 1. So negative index of the iterator L plus is not empty. It has at least one negative eigenvalue. And now we show how the negative indices of the operators L plus and L minus change when we go to a proper constrained subspace. So xk is a space of vector functions in xk minus 1, which are orthogonal to u first adjoint and u second adjoint. They are orthogonal to the eigenvectors of the same eigenvalues lambda 0 and minus lambda 0 of the adjoint operator. Then, which is equivalent to first component u orthogonal to w0 and w is orthogonal to u0. Using the precise forms of u first adjoint and u second adjoint. So, x constrained xk is a subspace of vector functions. For u, we have one constraint, u orthogonal to w0, and for w, we have w orthogonal to u0. So proposition about the change of the negative index is as follows. If we assume that this quadratic form is positive, then negative index of L plus is getting reduced by 1. And negative index of L minus doesn't change when we go to the constraint subspace. And if the quadratic form is negative, then negative index of L plus doesn't change, and negative index of L minus gets reduced by 1 when going to such a constrained subspace. So we have two operators, L plus and L minus, and we prove the auxiliary lemma for the abstract operator L, and then we apply it to the case of two operators, L plus and L minus. So suppose we have a L self-adjoint operator on a subspace X of a Hilbert space with finite negative index and positive continuous spirit. X constraint is a constraint linear subspace of functions U and X orthogonal to W constraining L2 function. The negative eigenvalues of operator L in the constraint subspace are given by the constraint Schrödinger equation, Lu equals to mu u minus nu w constraining. We're just looking for the extreme of the quadratic form of the iterator u subject to u L2 norm fixed and u w constraining is fixed. So we obtain constraint Schrödinger equation. U must be in constraint subspace and mu is negative. We're looking for the negative eigenvalues. We introduce f of mu, which is proportional to the inner product of u and w constraining. We need this function f of mu because we'll be looking for its zeros. If for some mu f of mu is equal to zero, means that solution u of the Schrödinger equation is orthogonal to w constraining and lies in the constraint subspace. From the Schrödinger equation, we can substitute u and obtain that f of mu is equal to w constraining mu minus l to the power minus 1 w constraining in the product when mu doesn't belong to the spectrum of L in order to invert this iterator. So and therefore there are two cases. If such a function f at 0 is non-negative, then negative index gets reduced by 1 by going to a constrained subspace. And if f at 0 is negative, then negative index does not change. This is the theorem analogous to the theorem proved by Grzelak, Chatea and Strauss. So f of mu is like that, and for the self-adjoint operator L, we can use spectral calculus, which allows us to obtain the form for f of mu. F of mu integral from mu 1 to infinity, mu 1 is its lowest eigenvalue, w constraining, d lambda w constraining over mu minus lambda, where mu doesn't belong to the spectrum of the iterator L. We can differentiate this function obtained at f prime of mu is just equal to minus integral from mu 1 to infinity w constraint d lambda w constraint over mu minus lambda squared. Just differentiate this formula. And this, which is by spectral calculus, nothing but minus w constraining mu minus l to the power minus 2 w constraining. But u is a solution of the Schrödinger equation. We can express it and obtain that this precisely equals to this. Minus 1 over nu squared, when u is our Lagrange multiplier, times u l to norm squared. So as you can see, when mu doesn't belong to the spectrum of L, derivative of function f of mu is negative, which means that f of mu is a monotonically decreasing function when mu doesn't belong to the spectrum of L. We studied the behavior of function f of mu in the neighborhood of the eigenvalues of the operator L in X, whether it's continuous or has the asymptote. So we have operator L in X, and its eigenvalues are mu k negative. There are k0 such negative eigenvalues, and each eigenvalue is degenerate mk times. So there is an orthonormal set of eigenfunctions, ukj, j from 1 to mk, for such an eigenvalue mu k. Total negative index of the operator L on X is sum of such mk's from 1 to k0 equals to m, negative index of the operator L on X. So let pkj be the projection onto the such an eigenfunction ukj. We project w constraining function onto ukj, and coefficient is ckj. So at the top we have representation for f of mu. We get term related to mu k. Sum from 1 to mk, ckj absolute value squared over mu minus mu k. Plus integral from mu 1 to infinity minus interval mu k minus delta mu k plus delta. We surround mu k by the interval delta, which doesn't contain any other eigenvalues except mu k. W constraining d lambda w constraining over mu minus lambda. We investigate the behavior function f of mu from the right and from the left of mu k. So f of mu k plus epsilon equals to sum from 1 to mk ckj squared over epsilon plus integral from mu 1 to infinity minus mu k minus delta mu k plus delta w constraining d lambda w constraining over mu k plus epsilon minus lambda. Just replace here mu by mu k plus epsilon, where epsilon is small, less than delta interval. And to the left, f of mu k minus epsilon is equal to minus sum j from 1 to mk ckj squared over epsilon integral from mu 1 to infinity excluding the interval delta around mu k w constraining d lambda w constraining over mu k minus epsilon minus lambda. To study the behavior from the left, we replace mu by mu k minus epsilon. And there are two possibilities of the behavior function f of mu around the eigenvalue mu k of the operator L and X, depending whether eigenfunctions ukj corresponding to the eigenvalue mk belong to the constraint subspace or not. So first possibility is that ukj belong to the constraining subspace for all j from 1 to mk. So ukj are just orthogonal to w constraining, and the product is equal to 0. Since w constraining is orthogonal to ukj, coefficient ckj will be equal to 0 for all j from 1 to mk. So ckj is equal to 0, first term will vanish, and for f of mu k minus epsilon, also first term will vanish, and will be left only with second terms, which behave nicely as epsilon go to 0. when epsilon go to zero, second terms tend to the limit. W constraining, d lambda W constraining over mu k minus lambda integrated over interval from mu 1 to infinity, excluding the delta interval around mu k. And this expression is finite because its absolute value can be estimated as 1 over delta W constraining L2 norm squared. W constraining is square integrable, therefore its L2 norm is finite. So when epsilon goes to zero, function of mu tends to the finite limit both from the right and from the left. And these limits are the same. So therefore, when UKJ belong to the constrained subspace for all J from 1 to MK, F of mu can be continuously extended across mu pool to mu k. So you have a continuity at mu k. Second and last possibility here is occurs when there exists an eigenfunction UKS which does not belong to the constrained subspace for some S from 1 to MK. The rest of the eigenfunctions, UKJ, will belong to the constrained subspace. Why is it so? If UKJ doesn't belong to the constrained subspace, is not orthogonal to W constraining, then UKJ tilde, we can define the following eigenfunction, redefine as UKJ minus alpha J UKS. And alpha J is a coefficient which is equal to W constraining UKJ in the product over W constraining UKS in the product. So, as you can see, this UKJ tilde multiplied by W constraining will give zero. So, by Gram-Schmidt orthogonalization procedure, the rest of the eigenfunctions can be made line in the constrained subspace. So, one function doesn't belong to the constrained subspace and the rest belong. So, therefore, CKS coefficient is not equal to zero, but the rest of the coefficient CKJ are equal to zero. So then from the right, F of mu k plus epsilon is CKS squared over epsilon plus second term, and on the left minus CKS squared over epsilon plus second term. And the rest CKJ terms will disappear because the rest CKJs are equal to zero. So as you can see, if we make epsilon go into zero, from the right, we get plus infinity. So F of mu will blow up to plus infinity from the right. And on the left, because of the minus sign, if epsilon goes to zero, function of F mu will go to minus infinity. And in this case, at mu k, we have a vertical asymptote with F of mu going to plus infinity from the right and minus infinity from the left. In the case when one of the eigenfunctions corresponding to mu k of the operator L doesn't belong to the constrained subspace and the rest belong, we have a vertical asymptote. This is the second type of behavior of f of mu in the neighborhood of mu k, the eigenvalue of the operator L and x. So suppose that we have k such vertical asymptotes of f of mu at points mu I1, mu I2, mu I k. So, which means that k eigenfunctions do not belong to the constraining subspace. The rest of the eigenfunctions n minus k will belong to the constrained subspace. So, therefore, we can analyze the behavior of f of mu when mu is negative. Of mu and mu is negative. When mu is less than the lowest eigenvalue, we have a precise estimate as f of mu, absolute value is 1 over mu absolute value minus mu 1 absolute value, W constraining in the norm L2 squared. So as you can see, as mu goes to minus infinity, mu absolute value goes to infinity and f of mu tends to 0. Mu is monotonically decreasing, therefore f of mu tends to 0 minus. It tends to 0 like that at minus infinity remaining negative. Since function f of mu is monotonically decreasing, it will remain negative till the first asymptote, and go to minus infinity at the first asymptote mu I 1. From the right, it blows up to plus infinity. Let's analyze the behavior of the function f of mu in the interval between two asymptotes. Mu IL and mu IL plus 1 are two asymptotes. So at mu IL, it blows to plus infinity from the right, and at mu IL plus 1, it goes to minus infinity from the left. Function f of mu in the interval is continuous, differentiable, monotonically decreasing, so it behaves like that. And therefore, it will have precisely 1, 0, since it's monotonically decreasing. At the point mu L star, you have precisely 1, 0. So, if we solve the Schrödinger equation constraint with mu equal to mu L star, then we obtain solution U L star equal to mu L star Lagrange multiplier mu L star minus L to the power minus 1 W constraint, which lies in the constraint subspace. Since at the point mu L star f of mu is equal to 0 and f of mu is proportional to the inner product of u with the constraining function, it's equal to 0, therefore u L star is orthogonal to W constraining, and therefore u L star belongs to the constraint subspace. And it's very easy to check that u L star is square integral. So we have mu L star, negative eigenvalue, additional negative eigenvalue, and with a unique corresponding eigenfunction u L star lying the constraint subspace. So UL star is the unique eigenfunction of the operator L restricted to X constraint, corresponding to negative eigenvalue mu L star. L varies from 1 to k minus 1. Then we analyze the behavior of f of mu on the interval between its last asymptote and 0. So at mu ik, f of mu blows up to plus infinity from the right. And f at 0, there are two possibilities. It's either non-negative or negative. If f at 0 is non-negative, then function monotonically decreases and tends to its value at 0, which is non-negative, and therefore function is positive on the interval from mu ik to 0. And if f at 0 is negative, then function will monotonically decrease and have precisely 1, 0 at the point between the last asymptote and zero. Asymptote zero. So if the function has additional zero, it will also have eigenfunction lying the constraint subspace. So we have additional negative eigenvalue with the eigenfunction lying the constraint subspace on the interval between the last asymptote and zero. So therefore, there are two possibilities. There are two possibilities. If f at 0 is non-negative, then negative index in the constraint subspace is equal to n minus k. We have n minus k eigenfunctions lying in the constraint subspace plus k minus 1. These are the eigenvalues which appear between the asymptotes. And their number is k minus 1. And if f at 0 is non-negative, then we don't have anything on the interval from the last asymptote and 0. So total negative index will be n minus k plus k minus 1. Negative index on x minus 1. So total negative index gets reduced by 1. And in the case f at 0 is negative, we have that negative index in the constraint subspace is n minus k. Eigenfunctions lying in the constraint subspace of the original problem, plus we need to count zeros which appeared between the asymptotes and the last zero between the last asymptote and zero. So we get, in the case f of zero is negative, we get additional zero here. And the total number of such additional zeros will be not k minus 1, but k. And therefore, total negative index doesn't change if f of zero is negative. And now we apply this auxiliary proposition about the change of negative index to our problem with a pair of operators L plus and L minus. So we have pair of operators L plus minus. We go to the constraint subspace X constraint L. For L plus, we have the constraint Schrödinger equation. And U must be orthogonal to W0, so there is a term nu plus W0. And W must be constrained to U0, so we get a constrained Schrödinger equation for the operator L minus. The auxiliary functions F of mu will be F plus of mu equal to W0, mu minus L plus to power negative 1 W0. Mu doesn't belong to the spectrum of L plus to invert the operator. And for the operator F minus, we get auxiliary function F of mu, U0, mu minus L minus to power negative 1 U0 in the product. Mu doesn't belong to the spectrum of L minus. So F plus at 0 is very easy to compute. It's just plug mu equal to 0, we get minus W0 L plus to the power minus 1 W0 in the product. And from the eigenvalue eigenfunction system which we had, it's easy to compute this will be equal to U0 L minus minus 1 U0, this quadratic form. And F minus at 0, is not, we plug mu equal to 0 here, we get minus U0 L minus to the power minus 1 U0 in the. So in the proposition we had two cases where this quadratic form is non-negative or negative. So if the quadratic form is positive, then F plus at 0 is positive, and by our statement, L plus will lose one eigenvalue when going to the constraint subspace. So negative index of L plus will be reduced by 1. And F minus at 0 is negative, so negative index for L minus doesn't change if you go to constraint subspace. If the quadratic form is negative, then F plus at 0 is negative and F minus at 0 is positive. So for the, in this case, for the operator L plus, negative index doesn't change if you go to constraint subspace. And for the operator L minus, negative index gets reduced by 1 because F minus 0 is positive, which proves our statement about reduction of the negative index. Analogously, we can treat the case when operator L has real eigenvalues, I lambda are real, so lambda is purely imaginary. Lambda is purely imaginary equal to I lambda imaginary. So lambda I is not 0. We assume it to be simple. It's easy to show that the eigenvector will be U real I W imaginary in such a form. Minus I lambda I will be another eigenvalue with the eigenvector U real minus I W imaginary. Adjoint problem for the adjoint operator will have the same eigenvalues. I lambda imaginary minus I lambda imaginary. And the eigenvectors will get flipped. I W imaginary U real and minus I W imaginary U real. So again we go to constraint subspace of the vector functions orthogonal to the eigenvectors corresponding to the eigenvalues of the adjoint operator U1 adjoint and U2 adjoint. The system of equations for the eigenvector is L plus U real equal to lambda I W imaginary and L minus W imaginary equal to lambda I U real. And from this, again, as we did before, we can conclude, obtain the relation L plus U real equal to lambda imaginary squared L minus to power minus 1 U real. And multiplying from the right by U real, we obtain the relation L plus U real U real equals to lambda imaginary squared L minus minus the power minus 1 U real U real. So relation for the quadratic forms is similar to the previous case, but there is no minus sign here. Again, these quadratic forms do not vanish because otherwise we will have a generalized eigenvector, as we analogously to as we had before. And they are of the same sign, because there is no minus sign here. So they are either both positive or both negative. We have a proposition, if the quadratic form L minus to power minus 1 Uriel Uriel is positive, then negative index of L plus doesn't change, and negative index of L minus doesn't change when we go to constraint subspace. And if the quadratic form is negative, then for both L plus and L minus operators, negative index will be reduced by 1 when we go to the constraint subspace. We also treated the case of complex eigenvalues where lambda eigenvalue has real and imaginary part and non-zero. We assumed lambda to be simple. So there are three additional eigenvalues. As I said, lambda conjugate minus lambda and minus lambda complex conjugate. And we know precisely the eigenvectors. A joint operator has the same eigenvalues, lambda, lambda, lambda conjugate, minus lambda conjugate. And the eigenvectors get flipped components. So again, we go to the constraint subspace of the eigenvectors corresponding to these four eigenvalues of the adjoint operator. And we obtain that U must be orthogonal to W real and W imaginary. And W must be orthogonal to U real and U imaginary. So we get a problem with two constraints. L plus acts on U, which orthogonal to W real and W imaginary. And L minus acts on W, which is orthogonal to U real and U imaginary. In this case, we prove that negative indexes of both operators and L plus and L minus get reduced by 1 when we go to such a constraint subspace. Here, since we have two constraints, we use not auxiliary function f of mu, but 2 by 2 matrix. We use 2 by 2 matrix A of mu the 2 by 2 matrix consisting out of quadratic forms of the operator mu minus L inverse computed on W1, 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 W2, W2, W1, and W2, W2. We studied its eigenvalues, and it turns out W1 and W2 are two constraining functions that the reduction of the negative index is affected by the number of non-negative eigenvalues of matrix A computed at zero. So matrix A at zero, we have not F at zero, but matrix A at zero. So it has P non-negative eigenvalues. P is from zero to two, P non-negative eigenvalues. Then the negative index of the operator L will be reduced by the number P of non-negative eigenvalues of matrix A at zero. In our case, for our problem, it turns out that we have two auxiliary matrices, and it has at zero one positive eigenvalue and one negative. So number of non-negative eigenvalues is one, and therefore negative index was reduced by one. So we do the sequence of procedures of reducing the negative index of the operator H, and as it has been proved with the help of wave operators on the continuous spectrum, the operator H is positive. And that's it.